Yeah, it's funny because my wife, I was a couple months ago, and we talked about the business. She goes, "Wow, that's great! It continues to grow. I'm so excited." By the way, where's all the money? And I just like instinctively said, "Oh, you don't make profit when you grow. You only make it when you stop growing or slow down." And she just looked at me like, "What?"
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. I've got a guest back for the second time. The last time I interviewed this guest, his business was doing around $5 million a year. We were talking about the comparison between direct response and e-commerce styles of marketing and how he can actually blend the two in what he does with his successful business called Survival Frog. And that was episode 491 in August of 2016. Now, here we are at the time of recording at the end of May 2017, and our guest has almost doubled the business. So today I'm going to be speaking with Byron Walker about business growth. Welcome to the call, Byron.
Great. Thanks, James. Glad to be here.
Now, I'm interested in the story of how you've doubled your store in less than a year, especially because business growth is a hot topic with both Superfast Business and especially Silver Circle. A lot of the things that I focus on are to achieve business growth. And I think the first thing that we should probably address is, was the growth something that you had planned, or has it just happened?
Yeah, it was definitely planned. In fact, I think a lot of the reason why we're not only growing, but growing in a fairly smooth manner. I mean, yes, there's growing pains and there's craziness, but overall, for the type of growth we're seeing, it is fairly well leveled and feels good. I mean, I think the reason behind that is we had already gotten a lot of our basics down. Our procedures, documentation, the right people in the right seats, a lot of the things were in place that allowed us to grow. Because, I mean, growth is great, but sometimes it can cause a lot of damage too. And so we're growing, but we're also growing where we're increasing margins. And don't get me wrong, it is still crazy, but it's pretty well controlled in our growth. So it was planned, and I felt we had a really good strong base before we really started popping the lid off the top.
So when you sit down and think about where you want the business to go, who's involved in that process, and what is the process that determines what you're going to plan? And, you know, what is the plan for Survival Frog?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I've got the right people in the right seats. And so myself, I'm the CEO. And although I'm out of the day-to-day operations, I'm very heavy into the strategic planning of the company. And so who's behind that? Certainly, I would take the lead role as the CEO of the company in charting the path, you know, as to the future and where we're going, but my executive team as well. So we've got some great managers, and no decisions ever made in a vacuum. So it's always a, you know, team effort, and we talk through the pros and cons, and then we make the decision after that. So we do have some great managers on staff that are helping steer the ship. But that being said, I'm definitely the lead steerer just because, and there's a lot to be said about being pulled out of the day-to-day operations. Because I feel that although I'm still in the forest, as they say, I'm maybe one step out. So I can see a little bit more clarity than the managers who are running day-to-day operations. As far as where we're heading, we'll certainly be able to surpass $10 million this year. And we're hoping to hit $20 million the following, or maybe halfway through the next year, or, you know, to be on track for $20 million. So our big goal and our big, you know, thing that we're looking at in the future is to be able to hit $20 million in an annual period. And again, not just that number, because we're not just growing for the sake of it. It's with better margins, it's with more systems and documentation in place, and it's with, for the most part, really the team we currently have. We'll have to add a few other people, but we're not going to have to double the staff to be able to double the sales at this level, at least.
What will doing $20 million mean that's different than when you're doing a revenue of $10 million?
The big drivers behind the growth, whether it's what got us from last year to this point or even from this point onwards, has a lot to do with the new products that we're launching. With any product, I think, that you get a lot of traction with, you're going to have burnout. And the burnout may happen in a couple months. It may take a whole year. But whatever that period is, it will burn out. And it could be from your own efforts. It can be from the competition coming in. It can be from a bunch of different things. But a product is not going to just last for, you know, indefinitely. So finding those top sellers and replenishing them on an ongoing basis, that's our biggest driver.
So in other words, it's ironically, it's survival. Growth means that your business will survive.
Yeah. By having those fresh products coming into the pipeline. So right now, give you an idea, we launch around 5 new products a month right now, 5 to 7. And yes, it is as maddening as it sounds. So we launch a lot of products. And some of those are direct response sales pages, which do take a lot more effort. And some of them are just e-commerce products. But with that many products coming out on every month, then we're bound to have a success in there. And so let's say our successful ratio, 1 out of 5, even 1 out of 10, whatever it is, you start launching that many products, you're going to start having winners. Because as soon as we have a winner, then we really crank up marketing. And we can spend, you know, we spend anywhere from, say, $40,000 or $50,000 a week in paid marketing right now. That can only happen when we've got products that are top selling and performing very well. And we can only do that by bringing enough products to the market and seeing which ones win. Because I think even after I've been doing this 20 or 30 years, I'm still not going to be able to pick the winners. It's not up to me. It's up to the market. So we have to present enough to the market so that they can choose the best one. And that's the one that we push so hard on paid marketing.
Well, it's quite interesting. And it's good to hear a marketing bedrock, I suppose, that the customer is the one who votes with their wallet. I'm wondering why 20 million? Why not 50 million? Why not spend $400,000 a week on ad spend?
Sure. Well, again, we're not just growing for the sake of it. We do want to have it is planned out. It is controlled. And who knows? Instead of 20 million, maybe it is 50 million or who knows what it is. But we have to have certain metrics. We don't want to just double the business for the sake of it. We want to make sure that, you know, the margins are intact, that our overhead is, you know, within the cap that we've set. We have something called the labor efficiency ratio, and basically meaning we can't hire until we have revenue to hit a certain mark. Or if revenue dips a lot, we may have to lay off. It's a metric where I know if we're heavy or light on our labor costs. So there's a bunch of KPIs that we're monitoring where if they're within range, great, let's keep going. But as soon as something starts teetering, that's when we may pull back. And to answer your question on the marketing spend, as long as we're break even or within 10% negative or 10% positive, we will spend whatever we can. We're spending $50,000 a week now because that's the number we've been able to dial in and stay at break even.
Do you do an analysis on how big the market might be? Do you get a sense of whether you're a big player in a small market or a small player in a big market or somewhere in between?
Yeah, I think about that often, but I don't have an answer. I do believe we're the largest survival gear e-commerce company. When I look at all the traffic of all of our competitors, we certainly get more traffic than anybody else. And we definitely monetize our traffic better than anyone else. So I would say we're the leader. What percentage of the market that is, I don't know. And how big is the entire pie? I don't know. I've heard upwards of $1 billion. I don't know where that number came from. I don't really focus on that too much, though.
I focus on some of those things because of where I came from in companies like Mercedes-Benz and BMW. they did a lot of analysis, and also Vodafone and General Motors Finance. They did a lot of analysis on how big the market was and what piece of the market we were getting, at least as a guideline to know if you're underperforming. That's why I was curious about the 20 million. Is it just a stab in the dark, or is it, you know, like beyond that point, you're getting saturated and it's very hard for you to have ownership? Just a few other questions around that.
Yeah.
It's a privately owned business?
Yes.
So is the goal at some point to sell the business to someone else, like an Amazon?
As of today, no, but who knows what the future holds. And so one of the goals is to make the company as attractive and healthy as possible, to where if there was an exit, it's an attractive company. So that I've always believed, and you look at the end when you start, or the exit when you start. And so that's certainly part of the business model, but there's no activity in trying to sell it now.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're in the zone where you're just doing this as a hobby.
Yeah.
At the point when you're doing $10 million a year, it's definitely more strategic than that. And that's why I was curious. And I like that you've got some triggers that guide you as to when you should be hiring or changing the size of the team. What other triggers do you have in the business that you said plus or minus 10% for your ad spend versus profitability for the new products? So that makes sense. Do you have other triggers that you look at? And I'm curious, what sort of things do you actually report on? Are they lead metrics or lag metrics or a combination? And how often are they reported and to whom?
Yeah. So we are very big with our KPIs. And so we have, you know, big whiteboards, and we track everything on a weekly basis. There's about 12 KPIs, and there's who knows how many more. So key performance indicators, let's say there's 12, and some of them, they're all lagging. So, you know, how many leads did we bring in last week? How many, you know, what was our ROI? What did we spend? What did our database produce? But some of the key ones that we look at certainly is our database, because with our paid marketing, we're just breaking even on the front, you know, plus or minus 10%. So we're not making money when we bring in new customers. We only make money when the customer buys again and again, and the lifetime value of that customer. And so obviously we're really watching the database, making sure our open rates, clicks rates are healthy, EPCs, and what the net is, because that's really what feeds a lot of other pieces that we have going on. So that's the health of the list, let's say.
Yeah, well, I guess there could be some lead metrics that you look at there, like how many broadcasts you're sending out and how many people are visiting your website, because they'll tend to be an indicator as to how many people might make that first purchase, which will definitely be an indicator as to, you know, how much the value of the business is going to improve in the future as that customer goes through more spending hoops.
Yes. And in fact, for this year and next year, one of the key drivers is repeat buyers. Yes, we have a lot of repeat buyers, but I don't have clarity on it yet. And so that's one thing that we're starting to work on more and more is, you know, what percentage of all of our buyers have another purchase within the first 60 days? And how can we push that higher? If someone goes 60 days without buying, it's really tough to bring them back. And so not just tracking the number, but also what five things can we do to proactively get them to buy besides just the random emails? So we are doing that.
Yeah, I like that. I saw Ezra Firestone was talking about that in his e-commerce conference. He has a win-back campaign when he recognizes that a first-time buyer has not purchased again in enough of a time frame. And there was actually some extremely sophisticated marketing in terms of video campaigns, a percentage of the video watched triggering behavioral autoresponders and leading people back to the next product in line. And it was very clever. I'm wondering, do you do much segmentation, and do you do much with sort of behavioral database management?
We do. We use a system called Klaviyo. And so that monitors people that, you know, bought X, we can sell them Y. It also monitors when someone has come back to the website but not purchased, and what did they view on our e-commerce store? Let's email them about those products. It knows if they only went to the order page or if they only went to the product page versus the order page, and treats them differently, you know, different coupons, things like that. So Klaviyo is really smart in how it remarkets, not remarkets, but emails people based on their behavior and their purchasing. And we do have a win back in place. But in addition to that, we're building out our outbound phone call center right now. It's all in-house. And so soon we'll be able to call every single person who makes the purchase. Right now we're just cherry picking and pulling out the VIPs, but soon everyone will get a phone call. We can also put that together with direct mail, whether it's a catalog or a free item or whatever it is. When we can isolate someone as a VIP, someone who we feel for whatever reason is going to be a, you know, repeat buyer or spend a lot, then our budget's much bigger. So there's a lot of things we can do. You know, for us, one, it's customer support is just so critical for us at this phase. And we're always trying to create what we call the amazing buying experience. So when someone calls into our office, we answer the phone. You know, an email or whatever, we're pushing them to try to be on the phone as opposed to just email. And in fact, one thing that we do, all of our customer support reps, they are required to give away $500 in product each month. And it's not a suggestion. It's not, you know, it'd be nice if it happened. It's required. They have to give away $500 worth of product. And that's retail value. So the cost is obviously much lower for us. But that really amazes people. And sometimes the free thing, whatever it is, you know, it might go to someone who's upset, but it more than likely will go to someone who's really happy. Or especially if someone says, I love you guys, I'm going to tell all my friends. Well, let's get them some free product in their hands. So we really push the amazing buying experience, whether it's a phone call, a free item, whatever it is, we really want to impress them so they continue to come back.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm wondering, what sort of effect, if any, do shows like The Walking Dead have on your seasonal marketing and other things, like when North Korea launches another missile?
Yeah. So we have not seen any spikes in sales when there's a natural disaster or whether it's North Korea doing their thing. And I think the reason why we don't see a spike is because we do so much paid marketing. Our spikes are really just when we spend more money. And so I think organically, those spikes are so small, we can't see them on the radar, if you will.
So maybe it just moves the entire market sentiment and you're just tapping into it with your regular marketing.
Yeah. We're probably just a part of it. Our sales are, you know, since the elections. So this is interesting. So since the elections, we've exploded. So our growth is really fast. We're easily 50% right now growth year over year. It's probably a little bit higher than that. And there's some of our competitors are seeing good growth or similar growth, but we've also seen some competitors that are suffering. And I've talked to these competitors because they're friends and we, you know, network. And the only thing we can come up with is the people that are really suffering are those who had a very far right, politically speaking, sales pitch, angle. Everything was super conservative. And ours is more central, more apolitical. And so in one way with Trump winning, you know, the logic was, well, all the conservatives who were the main preppers are now going to be relaxed and they won't buy as much. And I think that hurt the companies that were marketing on the right side. We're more apolitical. And so we may have just doubled our demographic or, you know, our pool of buyers. So now we have all the liberals. And we do. We have a lot more liberals coming in, people on the left politically who are buying a lot of products from us now.
Right. So I guess all you can do is just react when things take a turn. Like I imagine if Trump gets impeached, which is highly likely according to some people, there might be some more turmoil and uncertainty in the market and how tuned into that would your copywriting be?
Completely. Yeah. I mean, we definitely follow all these trends, and we'll have blog posts that are talking about it, our email copy, but our products are very, again, apolitical. So we may use some political ad copy to get them to the sales page, but most of our sales pages are very product focused, not, you know, hooks or pitches or storyline. So, and then you did ask about TV shows and how that impacts us. So this is kind of interesting. We have always had a spike, or at least in the last 4 or 5 years, in September. And we weren't really sure why that was. And I think the best explanation is that's about when new TV shows come out. And so all the survival shows come out around that time. And I believe that's when we get our first spike of the year. And then from September through December, it's just crazy. That's our busiest time. But I think those TV shows do help us in a roundabout way.
Yeah, I've just watched the entire series of The Walking Dead from start to finish. You do think about things that were not on your mind before. It's like, what would you do? You know, what's their next move? It's really quite interesting learning the whole craft of survival through that lens. And I imagine that that's a part of what you are selling is, you know, it's in the name of the brand and it's the target market. And I imagine they would be absolutely rabid buyers and extremely subject to emotional marketing.
Yeah. I'm sure it adds up. As we say, usually bad news is good news for us. Helps with sales.
Right. So I'm interested in you as the business CEO. You're out of the day-to-day a little bit, enough to get some clarity. What sort of routine do you keep on a weekly basis? You know, how do you get in and out of the business activities? Is it hands-on in the office? Is it remote via a dashboard? Is it over the phone? Is it every day of the week? Is it some days? Like, how do you keep a finger on the pulse and contribute and also maintain that perspective of being slightly out of it?
Well, we have an office and we have 20 employees. So I'm in the office almost every day if I'm not at meetings or something else. And when I'm in the office, it's full of meetings inside the office. So with my managers or other key people. And so those meetings is really what gets me in touch with, you know, the employees, with what's going on, the problems, challenges, opportunities, things like that. And so those meetings are obviously very important for me. One thing that helps me kind of keep a level head, maybe several things, but one is reading business books. It really helps me kind of put things in perspective. It also helps me connect the dots, if you will, like, ooh, that idea and this idea and that idea, these things can be combined. And so it helps me stay out of the you know, deeper, you know, day-to-day stuff and more on top where I can kind of be more strategic in my thinking. I meditate. That helps a lot, especially when I've got, you know, 100 different ideas bouncing around my head. Is, you know, we're all some form of ADD. Meditation really helps me kind of get clarity and bring it back to the most basic things. And then lastly is priority lists. And both myself and all the key managers and even some of the key employees under them all have a working priority list that we monitor weekly, if not daily. And the thought is you can only get so much done. So your priority list has to be very organized, and you can't add a new priority to your list without taking one off. And that really makes you figure out where's the value and should we be adding this or should we push that off for another quarter or for next year. Those priority reports or priority lists are just super critical. You know, I'll tell you, one of our biggest challenges is that we have too much opportunity. And I know it's a great problem to have, but it is a huge problem because there's so many shiny things being thrown at us on a daily basis. If we chase every cool idea, we'd never get anything done. So really being strict with our priority lists has really helped us stay focused and make sure we hit our targets that we're reaching for.
Yeah, cool. So Tell me about some of the pains as you've grown. Like, what things could we expect as we keep growing the business that we would look out for? Because I'm a huge fan of preventing things that might go wrong if we were to be aware of it in advance. I imagine that is a top reason why you read books, so that you can learn about things before they happen and discover things to implement into your business rather than having to figure it out for yourself. So what sort of pains should we look out for?
Well, you know, with my business, it's all physical products. And so most of my pain is within our products, meaning buying enough so we don't run out of stock. If we run out of stock, we stop the marketing. We moved away from doing mostly air shipments last year to this year we're doing containers. And so we bring over one container every month now. And so most of our pains deal with product itself and or the lack of. Nothing worse than turning off a very successful marketing campaign because we're out of inventory. So our biggest pain points are those. Cash flow when you're growing is certainly one. You know, it's funny because my wife, it was a couple months ago, and we talked about the business. She goes, "Wow, that's great. It continues to grow. I'm so excited. By the way, where's all the money?" And I just like instinctively said, "Oh, you don't make profit when you grow. You only make it when you stop growing or slow down." And she just looked at me like, "What?" But it's true. When you have this type of growth, you're not banking much of it. You know, almost everything we make that hits the bottom line gets reinvested right back into the company. So cash flow is always going to be an issue as you're growing and scaling. Because we have to buy, you know, again, a container full of products. And our lead time before we get that money back is several months. So you have to be able to cash flow that.
It's kind of one of the things that sucks about an e-commerce business. And at the same time, is a huge barrier to your competitors, who if they can't figure out their cash flow, or the founder has too big a mortgage on their house, they're going to have slower growth than what you've experienced.
Yeah. And that brings up the last point on growth or problems. And that is problems, and this is all mindset, but the problems are okay. In fact, we have a saying that says easy sucks. And the reason why we say that is anything that's really easy doesn't last very long. So we don't want easy. We like challenges. We like when it's difficult, because if it's difficult for us, it's going to be difficult for the next guy or the competitor. And so we don't wish for the challenges to be easier to go away. We just wish that, you know, or hope that we have the ability to overcome those challenges better and faster than our competition. Because if we are better and faster than our competition and dealing with those challenges, boom, we just won. So we don't want the problems to go away. We just want to be able to work through them better and faster than our competition. And that'll put us out way ahead right there.
Nice. So that's along the lines of the obstacle is the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, and just having a positive attitude, because you're always going to have problems. In fact, the problems just get bigger, but it's okay. We're lucky to have these quality of challenges, because the smaller challenges aren't nearly as fun.
What's a tool or a technique that you've found particularly useful that you think would be good for other business owners to have a look at or investigate if they're not already using it?
I'm drawing a blank on that one. I mean, we use a lot of project management tools, Evernote. You know, we're moving to Redmine, which is a project management software. But other than that, nothing's really jumping out in my head. It's more systems than what we have in place. And back to that labor efficiency ratio, that's been a huge driver for us, because I used to hire people when we needed people. And then I'd find ourselves 2-3 months later in this negative cash flow where we're losing money. And so since we implemented the labor efficiency ratio, it sounds so boring, I know, but it's just this idea of you take your total labor cost, including the owner's salary, and divide that by the gross sales. And you need to have certain ratios in place before you can add more people to the payroll. So systems and documentation, systems like that really help us guide the ship and make better decisions.
We had a similar one, which was the number of support tickets per person. So we could, you know, we could figure out, by the way, every time we created a job in our SEO business, it created a support ticket because we would manage it through a support desk. So, you know, if we added an extra 50 support tickets, that meant there was 50 more jobs or 40 jobs and 10 inquiries, but the associated volume required to support that. So it's great to have triggers. Other triggers that people could use would be things like when they reach a certain revenue, they could change the company structure, or they could lodge their trademarks and or get business insurance when they're in the very small stages, because a lot of people start off with none of those things, which is frightening but true. So that's been good. I imagine you will continue to grow the business. What things do you keep an eye on outside of the business that you're in, that market that you're in? What do you look at, or where do you draw from for ideas other than your business books? You got any other resources you like to stay in tune with?
Yeah, for sure. And that would be masterminds and conferences. You know, Traffic and Conversion Summit is one we always go to. And we actually draw less and less from that every year, but we'll continue to go each year because it's just great. But now we're adding new and different conferences. So next week, I'm going to Internet Retailers Conference, IRCE.com, I believe it is. And so what that is e-commerce companies where we're going to be the small fish. And that's what I'm really excited about. We're not the bottom, but we're in that bottom third as far as our size. And so where most conferences we go to are direct response oriented, this is e-commerce oriented. And so all the big boys will be there. And so really excited about that. Just new circle of people, business leaders, and companies that are doing much, much bigger things than we are. Because, you know, being the biggest in our little niche, you know, it almost concerns me. I'd rather, you know, hang out with people that you don't want to be the smartest guy in the room. And so going to these new conferences that are outside of the direct response is really where I'm getting a lot of value. And same with little masterminds outside of the survival niche. I get a ton of great ideas, and I just learned so much from those.
It's a really valid point, and certainly, you know, one of the reasons I'm bringing this podcast out and doing really well with Superfast Business and Silver Circle is because I attended those events, hopping on that airplane for the first time since I was 12 years old and heading over to Los Angeles to Underground 4.
Nice.
Was a big eye opener for me, and definitely the start of a huge growth phase. And for that reason, I've been running live events each year as well to cross-pollinate my customers and prospects. But the most recent one that I've got running, which is the Maldives Mastermind, which is held on a boat, it's over 100-foot long boat. Nice. In the Maldives in September, someone emailed me and said, oh, you know, am I going to be out of place here? Are these, you know, am I going to be wearing the wrong pants? I'll get there and find everyone's doing bigger and better than I am. And I said, well, that's the one you want to be on.
Yeah.
You want to be on that boat. You know, as long as you've got board shorts, you'll be in the right pants. But it's, you'll level up if you play with people who are further down the path than you. The other thing that I found to be true, and I'm interested if you have too, is that the more successful people are, the less worried they are about reaching out and helping you. That's like they sort of empathize with you, and they see a little bit of a reminder of that spark that they once had at that point, and they seem extremely helpful and willing to share, where you might think they couldn't bother to spend the time with you or to extend an olive leaf, but they really do actually pull you up. They reach down and bring you up faster because they're not afraid of you and they've already been where you're at.
Yeah, in fact, I've got a great story on that. So one other thing I've been doing is reaching out to e-commerce companies in the Denver area. That's where I'm at, and trying to network, non-competitive. So I reached out to a company called eBags, probably heard of them. They're in Denver here. They do $220 million a year. So that's way bigger than us. So I reached out to him on LinkedIn, and the CEO said, yeah, come on in, we'll talk. And I figured it'd be a 15, 20 minute conversation at most. We spent over 2 hours with the CEO and the founder of the company in their office, and then got a full tour and met all the managers and everything else. We were in there for like 3 hours before we left. And 2 hours of a CEO and the founder's time, I think that's so valuable. But we asked great questions, and we helped give a little value where we could. And it was just a great synergy. But to your point, they wanted to help. They saw themselves in us, you know, many years ago, and they wanted to help. So I agree. The more successful people, they want to give back. So don't be timid. Don't be scared of reaching out to people and asking, maybe not for help, but asking just for, you know, hey, can we talk? Because most of them want to talk, and they're very eager to help other people.
Yeah, there's this one guy, when I was a sales manager at Mercedes-Benz, there was this guy who had a Mercedes-Benz dealership and an approved Mercedes-Benz repairer. And I wanted to know how he did it. So I actually asked him, can I come around and interview you about it? And he said, no one's ever asked him about that. He said yes, because I was the only one who would send him a handwritten note at Christmas every year when he sent a fruit box to all of the sales managers. And I went around there, and I think I got an education for about 4 or 5 hours straight. And he was sharing with me these deep insights, which have still guided a lot of the things that I do online now. So it's really just a matter of asking. And a lot of the time, I didn't even have to ask. When I had very successful customers, they were more than willing to share their journey to the top and how things work. They were in manufacturing, they were in media, they were in politics, they were in Hollywood movies. They were fascinating people to be around, and the way that they lived their life and the way that they generously shared information was really quite a surprise. So I do encourage people to go to events, and I do encourage people to not be afraid of being the person who's there for the first time, or it's a new experience, because like you've come onto this show, Byron, to share. I mean, we're not in your market, and probably not too many of my audience going to rush out and buy a water filtration system. I'm not sure. Maybe they do, and I hope if they do, they'll go and visit your website at survivalfrog.com. But thank you so much for coming along and sharing this. As you've definitely been going through a journey that I know we're interested in, that growth journey, how to double your business. What are the key drivers? Knowing that you've got systems and routines, and that it's not all roses, there's some pains as well. And you've given some good clues as to the trigger points to look for, and you know what sort of information to report on, and who should have it, and how you're continuing to evolve yourself as the CEO and stay sharp. So hopefully we'll have you back next year to talk about how you doubled the business again.
There we go. Love it. Love it.
Thanks, Byron. So if you want to check out what Byron's cooking over there, go and have a look at survivalfrog.com, and you'll see this empire growing right in front of your eyes.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.